All right. Well, welcome back. We're reconvening the steering committee here, and we're going to recognize the honorable gentleman from West Hartford, Connecticut.
Not a lawyer. I thought he looked like a lawyer, but he's not a lawyer.
Yeah,
he's a friend of yours, though.
He had a lawyerly look to you, though.
Yeah. Lawyers are allowed to have friends that aren't lawyers.
Yeah. Well, and I guess non-lawyers are allowed to drive Porsches.
Well, they're called clients. Defendants.
That's right.
This is our first official guest on the steering committee.
Yeah.
A buddy of mine, Will. I've known him for a long time from his undergrad days, and he's a big car guy. He's especially into Porsches. So. Yeah.
We should say it's a beautiful day here in Denver. It's about 82 degrees. We went out for a drive. Had a pretty good drive until, got busy with traffic and all that.
Yeah.
But beautiful day. Will showed up in his 997.
Correct.
Carrera.
2007.
I'm sorry, Targa 4. Targa 4, which is kind of a rare car.
A little bit, yeah. Not a lot of Targas out there.
Yeah, yeah. And you had come from a cab, a 997.
I had a cab. 2006 Carrera 4S Cabriolet before. Yeah.
And you said it was a really, particularly loaded example.
An unbelievably optioned out car. The base price of those was about $92,000, and the sticker on that one was about $163,000.
So pretty good for 2007.
Someone threw $70,000 worth of options onto it.
So it had had PCCBs, full leather.
Ceramic brakes. It had the special leather.
Hmm.
So it wasn't just full leather. It was special leather on the sports seats, the hardback sports seats.
Yeah.
It had the power kit on the engine. What else did it have on it?
What wheels?
It had the lobster fork wheels.
Okay, that's...
Yeah, so nothing crazy on the wheels, but just a lot of options.
It had, all the electronic stuff.
And a lot of other little leather bits
on
places.
The fuse box cover?
Yeah, I believe the fuse
box
cover.
Really? I've never actually seen one.
Did have it.
Stuff of legend.
Yeah.
So
we should have said that. Should have pulled that off.
Like a $300 option.
That's amazing.
To get to kick your foot.
And you mentioned how loaded your car was, and I found myself, I noticed my denuded fuse box cover today. It could use a piece of leather. It really, in the sun, was kind of jumping out at me. I should say we're outside. Such a beautiful day. We decided to record outside.
So. Yeah, hard to beat.
If you hear leaves
November day
crunching under our feet, or
just random road.
There's my wife
outside.
Driving up now with beer.
It's November and it's 80 plus degrees out, so we're outside.
It is, and Will's got his son Quinn here too, so Quinn might want to contribute at some point, right? It's drop some knowledge.
Or just be our first audience member. We have an audience now. So
just to vet this guy. So it came from a 997, which was loaded. And before that, had a
3.2 Carrera, 1989, the last of the G50 transmission, the G body style.
Right on.
It was a great car, really high miles, but still fun to drive. But it felt like an old car.
Well, you're allowed to do that. Porsches. I mean, if you have a Ferrari, you can't put miles on it.
Right.
Porsches, I feel like that's...
And I loved it. It was a lot of fun, but I realized I wanted a car that I could drive all the time and not worry about it.
Yeah.
Even though it had high miles, the value was going up, and it felt like an old car.
Yeah, yeah.
And I could get into one of these for almost even money and have a car that I could drive every day.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's...
And you sent that G50...
Yeah,
went back
home to Germany.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
I remember yours on the build on the sticker on the inside. It said "Built in West Germany." Still,
it
right?
did.
Yeah, I love
yeah,
it.
Back
that
it
is
before the wall.
It was like one of the last ones I think probably to have that. So,
yeah, I always Porsches were always my first love. My father had an old one when I was little that caught fire with us in the back, which was very exciting.
Whoa.
And
did you ever find out what caused that?
Just an old car. I think a fuel leak. It was a 70s 911.
You guys were in the car?
Yeah, my sister and I were in the back. My mother came running up screaming, "Get the kids out of the car.
Oh,
it's on fire."
Oh.
And now this was before Porsche started charging extra for a fire extinguisher on your floorboard, right?
Yeah. This was in the early to mid 80s. We were driving to my uncle's parents' house. Ran inside, got a fire extinguisher, or had someone come out with a fire extinguisher, and they put it out before the fire department got there. But fire department rolled up and hosed the thing down.
Yeah.
And that was the end of that car.
And now the car sits at Beverly Hills Car Club just waiting for a buyer, right?
Probably.
Yeah, all these years later.
It's only $22,000 right now.
That's right.
But my uncle, also, who's my father's good friend growing up, he was into cars, always very mechanical, and rebuilt some 356s when he was younger, like in his college days. So had influences all around.
Yeah, right on.
It's always been fun.
So you didn't. So we all know your story of growing up with Peugeots and. Got into Porsches.
Well, so in my personal car history includes two Peugeots and also two Saabs, which I knew that blew you away growing up in the
Midwest. So Porsche was a real upgrade. But
Will,
you sort of grew up with it.
Yeah. He's dipped his toe into the Saab.
I had those in college.
Yeah. Right on.
When I was in high school and got my driver's license, that was right about the time my grandparents were getting older and they were moving into an assisted living home. And so I inherited my grandfather's car, which was a 1974 Chevy Impala.
Oh, wow.
Which would have been really cool if it was a 64 like Snoop Dogg had. But it was a 74, which was just
a
land yacht.
Yeah, yeah.
It was longer and wider than a Suburban at the time.
Wow. So was your first car?
That was my first car, yeah. You could lay down across either front or rear bench seat and not touch either door. It was quite a car.
That's awesome. That's awesome. What was your first car again?
First car. Why am I hesitating? So the first car I drove my
Make up something good.
Lotus.
Lotus Europa.
Lotus. For some reason, I was going to say a Jensen Interceptor.
That would have been cool.
The first car I drove around regularly was my mom's older 505 station wagon.
Yeah.
The Peugeot. Yeah. And then I had. In quick succession, I had the Mercure XR4 Ti.
Ah, that's right.
That was unusual.
It's pretty cool. How'd the ladies like the Mercure?
They didn't seem to care.
Yeah, no. Okay. Yeah. Did you tell them it's a Ford Escort Cosworth in Europe? Or
I said this car's a big deal, and they didn't seem to care.
That was a car with character. Yeah. My father's friend, who I was telling you about, who had the 911, had the 633 CSI and the Indian and the Scout. He had
XR4
Ti. Yeah,
that's amazing.
They were kind of hot for a little bit there.
Yeah,
late '80s.
It was all-wheel drive, right? You didn't.
No, rear-wheel drive.
I thought those...
Ours was rear-wheel drive.
I feel like his might have been all-wheel drive in that you didn't find all-wheel drive cars around that time.
It was unusual, It was to find just a regular car that would be all-wheel drive. Mm-hmm. The one I had was rear-wheel drive. Unfortunately, it was an automatic. So I inherited that one from my dad. I inherited the Peugeot from my mom, my XR4 Ti from my dad. And then, nothing really interesting. I was driving a couple uninteresting cars for a while there.
Do you remember they also made the Scorpio?
Yeah.
That was the more luxury.
They
sold them at your local Lincoln Mercury dealership, right?
Yeah, that was the idea. I think in Ford's mind, they thought they were kind of bringing over like almost like a BMW fighter.
Yeah.
They're going to sell them to the,
But we see this pattern like repeated again and again, right? Like with Alfa Romeo or whatever, let's just give them a corner in the showroom and,
what's the worst
expect them to succeed.
But then they never work because they don't have the full maintenance department. Well, for the Mercures, it was like the Ford mechanics and the Lincoln mechanics didn't know how to work on these things because they were completely different.
De Tomaso, wasn't that also in the Lincoln Mercury or
that
whatever?
That would have been, in your Ford family there for a while.
That's, that's right.
Yeah, so... it never seems to quite work out. So, when the Japanese companies came over, they did it right though. They just set up their own dealer network.
Acura, and it was a separate brand on its own.
There was something in Jalopnik yesterday about how great Infiniti was and where they are now.
They've really struggled.
Man, not to jump topics too much, but this is all sort of that same era, what, 89, 90, 91, and that first Q45 came out, and that absolutely was a BMW. Competitor. Had that weird belt buckle hood ornament and no grill. Do you remember that? It had
Well, I remember that for sure, and I also remember for a while when they were just at the very beginning, they had these car ads on TV that
that's
never
right.
showed the car.
Just leaves.
It
was a day much like today.
It had a buzz for a while. People were like, why would you spend so much money on the car ad and not even show the car? But it worked. They were successful.
They were a little more exciting than Lexus, which was just the luxurious, reliable car.
Yeah.
But
boring,
they
but
had an exhaust that sounded good. It was... I wanted like the G35 for the longest time.
I like the J. Was it the J? The real swoopy one, the J30, I think it was. It came out a couple years later. It was the midsize one.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought that Lexus was so derivative with the LS. It was just
a
Mercedes knockout.
Like
it sort of looked like the first generation Altima a few years later.
That was interesting. And that was also rear-wheel. Yeah. They were rear-wheel drive is the deal, right? They were... The higher end Infinities, right? And the G35,
I believe
rear-wheel drive.
Well, Nissan's just fallen so much as a company. I mean, remember when Nissan was
struggling.
Nissan at that era, at that time, was great with the Maxima. You get a Maxima SE with
four-door
the white gauges,
coupe.
Very cool, like in red.
Yeah.
The 300ZX was a cool car. The 240SX was something I would have driven happily in high school.
Maxima was one of the nicest standard transmissions I have ever shifted.
Yeah,
it was so smooth.
Yeah,
that late 90s, early 2000s Maxima.
Yeah, it was a great car to drive.
We're talking about people we don't know. Remember Joe Dukes from school?
Oh, yeah.
He had a brand new one, like 98 or something like that, when we were at school.
We drove that down to spring break, I think.
Oh, wow.
I wasn't on that trip, but I was on a couple of road trips with him, and it was a great car.
Yeah.
We had 4 or 5 carloads of guys driving down to Panama City Beach, and all these guys got in with him.
Yeah.
And drove, and they got to, we got to a stop like 8 hours into it, and realized that nobody else in his car could drive stick shift. So he had to bring me over to drive the next.
So you could take a break.
Andy also didn't trust anybody to drive it.
Yeah, he let me drive it, and he didn't let many other people drive it. It was like at a time when like all of us were driving older secondhand cars.
Yeah,
he had like a brand new car.
Yeah, and where is he today?
I don't know where he is.
He's a helicopter pilot, actually.
Is he really? Oh.
Yeah, shout out to Joe.
I was hoping for something not so cool.
He's a helicopter. He's one of those Lifeline.
Like a Flight for Life?
Oh, so he's a doctor, too. No. Oh.
No, not quite. Not quite.
Kidding.
No, but he's...
Some kids have all the luck.
I think helicopter pilots are pretty interesting.
Oh, I think that's pretty awesome.
That could have been, insurance adjuster.
Yeah. He did not go to art school.
he doesn't have art school.
So you probably know this is a running gag. I went to art school, and it worked out okay, but it's... So I'm not a helicopter pilot. Right on. And so you... What else is in your fleet now? You've got the 997.
So we've got the 997.
Oh, he's got a unicorn in it.
Yeah, tell us about the unicorn.
Yeah, so we actually, the only car that we've ever bought new, my wife and I, when she moved out here to Colorado, she had an older Acura 3.2 CS, I think was what it was.
CL, right?
Or CL.
CL, yeah,
exactly.
That was a neat
car. Little coupe.
Yeah.
It was a front wheel drive coupe and fairly useless if you wanted to go skiing or anything like that. So we decided it was time for her to get a new vehicle, and this was 2005, early 2005, and we were looking. We wanted an Audi S4 wagon. We wanted a wagon. We had a dog. We wanted the room for that. And we're looking at 5-year-old Audis coming out of warranty, and Subaru came out with their new updated Legacy, and we got the Legacy GT wagon with a stick shift, and it ended up being the 1 year that they sold that with a stick shift. So now... 14 years later, it's a bit of a unicorn.
Wasn't there one on the BAT recently?
I'd like
to know what that went
for. It wouldn't surprise me. Yeah. They flow through there every once in a while. Most of them have 180,000 miles, and they're on their second engine and their fourth turbo, because guys do all these modifications on them, and you can get a ton of horsepower out of those things with mods. It's essentially the same engine as the WRX of the time.
Right.
They put a bigger turbo on it, and they end up blowing something.
But there was a Forester like that, too, I think, with that engine.
XT.
Yeah,
they put
the
Subaru for a while was, they put it in the Forester, they put it in the Legacy,
Outback.
And they put it in the Outback. Yeah. It was great.
It wasn't that particular Forester a really stripped-down model otherwise?
It was a Forester XT. It was a stick shift, and it had the 2.5 turbo in it. It was really fun. A lot of the guys in the Subaru specialty shops around here, they love those.
I see them up in the mountains.
They'll slam the,
the lights
the
on
suspension
top.
On it.
Well, they like them here because it's like getting an WRX or an STI, but you have a lot of cargo space to gear up to the mountains. So they're really popular here in Colorado. I've never seen as many until I moved here.
I never knew that this was a thing. You know what else I never knew was a thing? I told you this, Doug, the other day. I was up in the mountains doing my thing on the peak to peak. I got passed by a group of three little Chevy Sprints or Chevy Aveos, but they were turbos. And so there were three of them, and one of them was slammed. A couple others were lifted with the lights, but they were obviously turbos because you could hear it over my car.
Yeah.
And I mean, they must have been, upgraded turbos.
Yeah.
And they were pretty quick. Like, the car I hardly knew existed, and this is apparently a scene I didn't know existed. So, if we ever have to cut back, there's a,
back to the Chevy.
Get rid of the Porsches or whatever.
I haven't seen that scene yet.
It's
the Subaru scene's pretty big. Yeah, here in Colorado.
Probably up in Nederland or something. It's the thing to have. Cool. We had to get on drive today because it is such a beautiful day. I don't know if we're going to get another day like this.
Apparently, it may snow on Monday here.
Saw a few other cool cars out today, but nothing too exciting.
Yeah, one of those, was it the Razor, the three-wheel thing?
Yeah, that guy had a roof on it.
Those things have a lot of angles on them.
They do. And that's as fast as I've ever seen one driving. So a nice 997.2 GTS Cabriolet. So that 997.2 Cabriolet, the one GTS, the white one.
Yeah, the GTS one. By when we were taking one of our vomit breaks.
That's right. That's right. Not you.
No, unfortunately.
Did you actually throw up, Quinn? Did you actually throw up?
No, he held it,
oh, okay.
Held it in the whole time.
Yeah. Good man.
A little river water calmed his stomach.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's great.
We realized we didn't have any water, so I went down and dipped my coffee mug in the river.
No, I mean, it's
got
hey,
a cold,
you know,
refreshing beverage.
I'll pay extra for that.
Yeah. I figured that out when I saw you handing him the coffee mug. I'm like, oh,
that's
he must
awesome.
Put water in that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
you're
you are a Colorado kid.
Yeah.
It's
drink that water. So, well, as we said, it's about 80 degrees here in Colorado, so people have got their motorcycles out, they've got
yeah.
their sports cars out.
Yeah.
I was telling both of you guys that I saw some World War II vintage Jeeps driving
yeah,
down
yeah.
with guys in full attire. I guess they're going down to the parade that we're having here.
Today is the Veterans
yeah.
Day Parade.
Yeah.
Veterans Day Parade,
but two Jeeps just driving by with four guys in it.
Cool.
And didn't look like they have any seatbelts on. Didn't look like they were...
I'm surprised we didn't see a flyover today. Typically they'll
yeah.
do.
It might happen while we were yeah. in the cars, I guess. But yeah, but yeah. So it's a nice day out. It's good here in Colorado. It's good
yeah.
to be in Colorado.
I thought I'd see more though. I thought I'd see some more interesting cars out there. I was a little disappointed, but
yeah, that route is
bit,
a,
yeah.
is a very popular.
It
one,
is.
But,
yeah.
I mean, there's
yeah.
a little sand and yeah. gravel out there, but
well,
the roads
yeah.
are in great
the real
shape.
Men were out there today driving, and yeah. mm-hmm. we have this other sort of running gig. We talk about all the cool cars we see parked in front of the mall here at Cherry Creek.
yeah.
But we rarely see them out
yeah.
being driven,
right.
you know, and it's. It's so true, but we were out there, and that's what's important. And how are we doing on time?
Well, with our we're probably going to pause here in a second.
Okay.
We're going to go to a commercial break here, and we'll be right back.
Had to wait for the powerful and loud Civic to drive by before we started recording here. We're being outside. I didn't want
you never,
the rumble
Civic,
to...
You never know. It could be really loud.
That's true. It could be obnoxiously loud. But, well, you know, one of the things we've talked about is sort of the leap of faith that it requires to buy a car on the internet or over the phone or whatever. And Will was just saying he's done this three times. We should say, Will is... I want to make up the story for you. You're a famous racing driver. You know, we haven't told anyone your last name.
Yeah.
It could be Will Power or something. you know, you're let's just say you're not in the, you know, you're not in the automotive realm professionally.
I am not.
Okay. No. All right. We're not Matt Farah. We're not Doug DeMuro. We don't have the connections to have famous people on, but
not yet.
But right, but yeah. I think Will's got some pretty good stories, and has dipped his toes into the Porsche world now a few times. In the last three times, you've bought cars sight unseen.
I have, yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, the biggest impetus to that for me was budget. I couldn't walk down to the dealership and write a check, and so I was really wanted to get into this world and needed to do it on a pretty tight budget. Mm-hmm. So, you know, looking everywhere I could under every rock, and it just happened the way it did.
And that's, I think that's something we've all gone through here as we've looked at whatever budget you have, you always want to try and stretch it out.
Absolutely.
Further.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you are always looking abroad. So, I mean, you know, you're right. It's like to go down to the one, you know, to the Stevenson Porsche down here in Colorado, they'd be happy to sell you whatever. But, you know,
they got some nice people down there and some beautiful cars.
Sandwiches. They have sandwiches.
They're able to build a $10 million brand new building.
Well, I save money on sandwiches if I buy down there.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
So, but yeah, I think we've all, you know, set that whatever search we're looking for, you know, any distance or nationwide, whatever the thing is, and just seeing what we can find. And I've always been nervous about it, but you've done it three times and had, I think, had three
I've done
successes
it and I think
out of it. So,
because I've been relatively, I've come through it unscathed, that I've been willing to take that leap again.
Yeah.
The first one, when I bought the 3.2 Carrera that we talked about earlier, I knew what I wanted. I wanted an 89. I wanted the last year that they made that model. I wanted a Cabriolet. And I needed to stay under a certain price, and they were going up in price at that time. And I found this one with high miles in California, and I tried to get in touch with them, and this woman wouldn't call me back. And then I realized she didn't speak English very well. I think they owned a Mexican restaurant out there.
Huh.
And this older woman, you know, it's the little old lady from California.
Yeah.
And she didn't have strong English, and she was afraid to get on the phone and talk. And I realized that that's why it had sat there unsold for a while.
Huh.
And I ended up talking to her son-in-law, who could speak with me much more clearly and answer my questions. And she was very attached to the car and unwilling to really negotiate with anybody when people wanted to make an offer. And she thought it was worth something, and people weren't offering that. And I talked him into letting me take it.
What was it listed at?
I think it was listed for 16 and change.
Really?
Yeah. But understanding that it had about 160,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
And the market was very different back then.
Yeah, seems like such a bargain now. Wow. That's...
Yeah, but I finally talked him into taking it to a local shop to have it checked over. Hmm. And I think she didn't want anybody to drive it. She just wanted someone to write her a check.
Sure. I get that.
And, yeah,
and well, that's a question I want to ask, but I want to finish. I want you to finish this story.
I developed a little bit of a rapport with this guy, and he brought it to the shop, and they talked me through it, and I knew it had some needs, and they gave me quotes on different things that it needed, and she was saying, "But no, the tires are beautiful." And I said, "Yeah, but they're 12 years old. They got a ton of tread on them, but you know, it needs tires."
And we know what can happen with bad tires on a Porsche.
And,
yeah,
and I had some real conversations with her son-in-law, who was able to kind of convey that.
Yeah.
You know, this is the reality. This is what it needs, and this is what those things cost. And I ended up getting it for $12,500.
Wow!
Wow!
That's amazing.
And were you able to sort of show like this is what the mechanic said needs to be fixed? So
I basically worked it down from the price she was asking, and because she was saying it doesn't need anything, and so I had her understand that 12-year-old tires aren't safe, and
even though
they have tread, they're not perfect, and so it needs tires, and it needs this, and it needs that. And I got a great deal.
Was it one phone call, or was it a couple?
Oh, it was a number of phone calls and emails. And,
Doug Fogler-like negotiation skills.
It took a while.
No, I think this guy would do much better than me. I actually might use him when I buy my car from afar. So you've done it, you've done it with all your cars. You've had some sort of pre-purchase inspection done, and I think that whatever it is, you know, whatever $300 or $400, it's if you're buying a used car, it's the best way to go.
For the most part, the first two times I had great luck with it. The second car, you know, came up with a few little items, and for the most part, it was a pretty easy negotiation. The third one, I went to a Porsche dealership to have the inspection done, and it pretty much came through with flying colors. And I got it home and opened up the airbox, and it was filled with leaves.
Wow!
And is that this one here? Your current Targa
4? All sorts of issues that they clearly should have seen. I think they sat with it in the shop for an hour and charged me for 3 hours of labor. Wow. I was really frustrated and on the phone with them. And they wouldn't do anything about it.
Wow.
And it got to the point where they wouldn't call me back, and I put in a dispute with my credit card company and got my $500 back.
Yeah.
And then they called me back.
Yeah.
And they realized that the money was coming back.
Yeah.
And I called back once and said, you know, you had your chance, and this is the way it goes, and they never called me again. I think they realized that I rattled off all the issues that they should have caught.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was a big disappointment.
Yeah.
Fortunately, nothing.
Seems like nothing
really high dollar
wrong with the car, though.
But they clearly
didn't
do their.
They didn't do a good job.
Do what I paid them to do.
That's too bad. And that was at a Porsche dealership.
That was at a Porsche dealership.
Oh, that's too
bad. Porsche dealerships either seem to be amazing or terrible, right? I mean, there's not a lot of gray area, at least in my experience.
Like that's what I've seen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, chargebacks are your friend, though, when it comes to Porsche dealers. I've learned. So.
What's that? Sorry.
So chargebacks are your friend when, you know, that's a story for another time.
Well, I'm not ignoring that story. I just wanted to follow up though. So, so you've done twice with private parties where you've, I guess three times with private parties where you've had to arrange to do a pre-purchase inspection. I mean, is it awkward when you ask them? How do they feel about that? Or are they, you know, cause they generally have to drive it over there, right?
Yeah. It depends a lot on the owner.
Yeah.
The first one, the little old lady, she was very reluctant. This is my car. It's my baby. It's perfect. And this is what I want for it. And it wasn't until having the conversations with her son-in-law that I was able to get that done.
Yeah.
The other ones, they were more enthusiasts, and they understood. The third one, though, was on eBay. And if you read the fine print, if you click buy it now, it is not a contractual obligation to purchase the car. You're expressing your interest in
versus an auction.
Because on cars, eBay understands that it may not be as presented and an opportunity for the buyer to get that inspection done. And the guy was not really happy with me that I hit buy it now before saying I wanted that done.
Sure.
But I said, well, in the eBay contractual language, I'm not obligated to buy this, but I am telling you I will buy it.
You're a lawyer.
Under these conditions.
Yeah. He's a better lawyer than I am.
And he, once he got over that and realized that I was, in fact, correct, we took it.
And he could have still pulled it and just been like, fine, I'll just, the next guy won't know
he
that.
He could have. He, yeah, he could have relisted it and said, screw you.
Yeah.
But he, ultimately, after we spoke a couple times on the phone, he realized that I was serious. Mm-hmm. And after the inspection, there were a few things. I negotiated the price down a little bit, and we went from there. So it worked out well for both of us.
Okay. Because I guess that's, I just need to, and I will when it comes time to, when my money's on the line, I will have to be more, tough about this. But yeah, I'm going to have to insist on, I'm going to have to ask about a pre-purchase inspection. And then refusal on something like that is a big red flag, right? Yeah. I mean, someone's not willing to, like,
what are you hiding?
Yeah exactly. Yeah. If you claim it's a great car on the listing, so let's go ahead and just verify that. Yeah. Then you'll have a pre-purchase inspection that says it, I'll let you keep, I always thought there's a way to, like, negotiate, like, I'll pay for it, you can keep a copy of it, and if I don't buy it, you can, someone else can, you can give that to someone else, but I don't know.
A good shop will say, you're paying for this, I'm not going to give them a copy of the inspection unless you give me the okay to do so.
They should do that, right, because I've paid for it.
They can use it if you don't buy it to help with their marketing as they're trying to sell it. So
that's
it is worth something
it's
to
worth
them.
Something to them
it
if it's a good car, and they should want to be able to, And Ryan, have bought a few cars from afar as well. And
I sold one on eBay, and I have to tell you about that real quick because it was interesting.
I don't know if I've heard that story.
It was such a beautiful car.
Yeah.
That
this is your A4,
This was a 2001 A4. It was a 2.8. It was the S-Line manual. It was a beautiful car, black over this parchment leather. Really a nice one. Worst maintenance car I've owned maintenance-wise in my life. The timing belt broke at 40,000 miles. This interference engine seized. I had to have it rebuilt.
Cool.
Sold a couple years later on eBay for about $8,100, and the guy got it and said it was so nice, he sent me another $500.
That's
right.
You can't
beat that, right?
That's amazing. We were just hearing the unbelievable story about how Ryan apparently sold a car to a guy who felt that he had so undersold it that he had to send him another $500.
And the sad, it kind of hurt because I thought I'd had a pretty good price for it.
You're insulted.
Yeah, geez,
on top of everything.
Yeah,
else,
I gladly took it, of course. I remember I sent him a handwritten thank you note. I was so impressed with that.
I think that deserves that.
Absolutely.
It certainly deserves a shout out on the steering committee.
Right. So wherever you are, guy who bought my 2001 A4 and. Yeah. 2000.
You're the steering committee hero of the week. So, so you sold that one on eBay, and that sounds like that went really well.
It did.
You bought your next one.
Yeah, I bought the next one on eBay as well. I was feeling eBay, I guess.
Yeah.
And
it
was a 2008 S4. Mm-hmm. I think it had about 40,000 miles, and I remember at the time I got it for, I don't know, $24,000 or something. It was a really, it was 2 years old, so it would have been 2010, I guess, when this all went down. I was way off. So it was an exceptional deal.
For a car that probably listed for over 50,
I would think. I would think. I flew down. I flew my dad down there. We went down. It was in Fort Lauderdale. And now I've since learned you have to be very careful when you buy a car in Florida for a number of reasons. But we showed up, and I thought, well, no, it was an automatic, and I didn't want an automatic, but it was certainly, a manual would have cost another $6,000 or so on the used market. So it was a good deal, but I thought it was just that it was an automatic that was holding it back. Interestingly, it was the one-year-only automatic with the six gear, which was better than the other years, but it still wasn't an automatic.
It was the best automatic.
It was the best automatic. Had paddles. It was a great car. Just wasn't the sports car that I wanted. But anyway, getting ahead of myself. Flew down with my dad down to Fort Lauderdale. It was a big deal. I was very proud of myself. I was paying cash. I had my own little business at the time. Life was good. And the car was shockingly nice, and I couldn't find anything weird in it. I actually found a Bible, one of those little cards that they hand out, a little Bible verse or something later in the trunk a year later. But it was a shockingly good car, and couldn't really figure it out. It did need tires. That was the only thing. It had Fusion brand tires, which I knew from the pictures, but they were way far gone and not as good as the ad said. And that was really it. We stopped. I had some Continentals or Michelins put on in Louisville at Bluegrass Motorsports on the way back, and thought we were good. And then I you know, it wasn't the sports car I wanted, and I decided I wanted a 911, and I found a beautiful 997, 2005, talked about this car before, and went to trade in the car, and they said, you know, this car has been repossessed a couple of times.
A couple of times.
Yeah.
I heard about the one. But,
yeah. And that's apparently it went to auction and I ended up with it. And, you know, no damage or no, but it was, it apparently that is a hit, like an accident, which I don't know if I really buy. But no, that was their excuse when it came time for trade-in value. But in the end, I think I got 18 or 19 on trade-in. I'd had about a year. I had only paid, what did I say, 24 or something, you know, and I'd driven it for a year. You know, I had new tires. It was a sharp car. I had Michelin P4Ss when I sold it. Or no, they were Super Sports at the time.
Yeah.
But predecessor.
Canceled out the repossession.
Yeah. And, but, so, but all in all, not a bad experience. And the car I have now, my 718 came and it was new, but I got an exceptional deal because it was a manual and it all the things I liked that no one else wanted. You know, which is why I got it. It had the 19-inch wheels, not the 20-inch wheels.
Well, we talked. This is another inside joke we have. He got basically a Cayman T before there was a Cayman T.
Yeah, it's got like, the sports seats. It's got the
stripped down.
All the performance on and the better wheels on it.
I think so. I mean, obviously, I'd take a Cayman T, but this is called. Came in lowercase t or something. So this place, I've always had pretty good experiences, and it sounds like you have too. And
I think so. Yeah, I mean, between eBay and Cars and Auto Trader, it's about you're buying the person, not the car, and you do your due diligence.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a lot of crap out there, and a lot of people asking the moon for not the right car. Mm-hmm. But if you find the right person, then. I think it's worked out pretty well for me.
Well, let me ask you this, both of this. I don't know if this is an issue with either of you with the cars you've purchased. Have you ever had, like, so you've obviously moved forward on your three cars and your two cars or whatever, but, like, how many cars were there before you? Like, how many, were there a bunch where you were just like, nope, I just asked a question and that was a red flag and I was like, no. Like
a lot of them, you know, when you do it for long enough, I could get a feel by the way the ad was written, the way the pictures were taken, and... You know, it's like, wow, it looks good, but I'm just going to pass. Or you send one email and the response you get just turns you off.
Yeah,
okay. You know, I don't have to buy a car right now. So if I'm not going to get the warm, fuzzy feeling from the guy right off the bat, I'm just going to move on. And the last one, after the guy was a little pissed at me for the eBay saying buy it now and then telling him now I'm going to negotiate because I want you to take it to get it inspected, he realized that I was serious. And after talking to him more and more, I realized how much the guy loved his car and how much he cared about it. And he dropped it off at my sister's house to get shipped over, and he's like taking pictures with my sister with the car and with my nephew in the seat. And you could see he was like... It was hard for him to let it go. And
Well, and that's what's gotten me thinking a little bit. There's a couple things got me thinking about that. Is that, like, I think maybe I should, for whatever I'm buying, I feel like I should. I think they should stick to forums sometimes. So I feel like buying from enthusiasts is better, isn't it?
The forums are a great place to look at cars, but they're people that think their cars are worth a mint.
That's a great.
And you can't talk them down from it.
A great point.
A lot of them are very stubborn on their prices.
Yeah.
I looked at a lot of cars on there, but I never made an offer on any of them because I realized they weren't going to come down to where I thought was reasonable.
What did I send you? The GT4 the other day? Because I'm kind
of
looking for
GT4s.
Well,
you sent me a lot of things, so it's hard to...
I don't know how you get any work done with all the links I send you.
I spent a lot of time looking at your links.
But somebody wanted $140,000 for a GT4 or something like that. And
So we should be like a 781 GT4, right? The previous generation, he wanted $140,000.
No, it was a 981. Yeah, 981. Yeah, $140,000. And the going price in these is $80,000 to $90,000, you know, for nice ones. Yeah.
Well, and they're barely ever $140,000 when they were new.
Oh, I'm sure it wasn't, but... But it was a Porsche Club ad, and you know, and some of these people know what they're talking about, and some people don't.
Yeah.
Right? So, so then you bought the other two.
Yeah, the other two were, I think, cars.com.
Yeah.
And that one was, as Doug mentioned before, kind of right place, right time. The guy worked for the World Bank. He was a French gentleman who was stationed at the World Bank headquarters in D.C. Yves Laurent.
Yeah.
He was, I think, lived in Maryland or Virginia and worked out of the main office in D.C. and was an expert on North African economic struggles and was getting relocated to Algeria.
No kidding.
And he had bought this car a year before at the local dealership used, and just he needed to sell it.
Yeah.
And I talked to the guy, and he loved the car, but he was, you know, you hear about the guy, oh, yeah, I'm getting redeployed overseas, and usually that's the scam.
Yeah,
but totally. After talking to the guy enough, and you Google the World Bank, and you see his picture there, and you realize,
checked out.
It does sound like the perfect scam, sort of, right?
Some French guy with a foreign cell phone number. where's my check going? But it was the real deal, and he had to sell it. He was moving.
That's amazing.
Yeah, well, that also explains why options.
That one was so funny. He bought it used a year earlier.
I didn't know that.
He had really crappy pictures on the listing. And I think that was why it hadn't moved, because it had been listed for a while, and I think he had a deal in place, and the guy got it inspected and found that the rear shocks were leaking, and it had the Porsche, the adjustable suspension where you could push the button to put it into sport mode, so really expensive to replace.
Yeah.
And that deal fell through because of that, and he relisted it with basically the price of replacing those off of it, and that's how it fell into my search parameters, because it had been listed for well more. And I stretched my budget a little bit and bought it, because I thought this is almost too good to be true, but I did enough due diligence that I felt comfortable with it, and it was an amazing car. I got it out here and brought it to my mechanic, and he said,
I was actually
the shocks are weeping. You get a 10-year-old car, shocks weep.
Right.
They're not leaking.
Yeah.
You see, you don't need to do anything to this.
I was there the day I got delivered. I remember that.
Yeah, that's right. You did come over.
I was staying home. It was back when I just had Noelle.
Born. Yeah.
She was new, and I was staying home with her that day. And he called me up. He said, it's supposed to be delivered today. So I was like, all right, I'm not doing anything. So I came over and watched it get delivered off of the car carrier.
What color was that?
It was GT Silver, which was like a limited production color at the time, because they had just put it on the Carrera GT in, what was that, 2005. Mm-hmm. And so then in 2006, they released it as a special color.
Yeah.
So that was one of the options that jacked the price up. You know, it was like a $4,000 option to get that specific shade of silver on that car.
Well, the interior was nice too. It was the natural brown
special leather.
That sounds like an amazing.
Even for a 12-year-old car, whatever it was at the time, the leather felt so nice.
Yeah, right. What happened to that car?
Down the road here to Evans and Holly.
Okay.
That's
where it would happen.
Our older son had gone to a little cars and coffee at the empty parking lot, the Kmart in Monaco and Evans. And we were driving home, and a guy decided he was going to take a left right in front of me.
Oh, geez.
And it was 10, 11 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday morning. No traffic on the road, and he just turned in front of me.
Wow.
And it was enough damage that it totaled it. Wow. Airbags went off. It was a significant accident.
You're okay.
I barely had time to hit the brakes.
Wow.
So we were shook up, but not injured.
Yeah.
It was totaled.
No kidding. Okay.
Yeah. So that was a sad day.
Yeah.
It was about this time of year, actually. I think it was November 19th. My mother had just come out for Thanksgiving. So she was in town, and I had to call and say someone needs to come pick us up.
It was a sad day when you sent me that picture.
Yeah.
But you, I remember you did. We're going to wrap up here soon.
But you recovered.
I didn't sell it, but I got an insurance check for significantly more than I had purchased it for. Which told me what a good deal I got on the car.
Yeah, absolutely.
It took some fighting with the insurance company.
I'll do one last story. We've gone a little bit over, but I thought the best thing I think you did is the insurance company was fighting you to be a stunt. They couldn't believe how many, you know, nice options were on that car.
The options, yeah.
And so they basically wanted the masonry sticker, the window sticker that comes in the Maroni.
Yeah, the Maroni is what they call it. Yeah, the Maroni.
Okay. I've heard it called the masonry sticker.
We already talked about this.
Whatever. So the point is the sticker. Yeah. They were like, they wanted to see that, and you obviously didn't have
that. Well, the insurance companies, their job is to not pay money. That's how they are profitable.
That's how they serve their share owners.
And I was able to provide them with the build sheet that Porsche gave me. The dealership printed it out, and it had the price on it, but it didn't have the price for each option.
Uh-huh.
And the insurance company said, we can't give you anything extra for all of these things without them itemized on there. And I went to a configurator from 2006 and priced out each one and hand wrote it on there, and they wouldn't accept that.
Wow.
They said, no, we need the window sticker. and Porsche doesn't reprint them.
Right.
They go with the car, and that's it. There's only one. And yeah. I'm like, I'm the third owner of this car.
Yeah.
And I found a guy that does reproduction window stickers for collectors.
No kidding.
And charges a significant amount of money. Yeah. He will print them on special paper so they feel age appropriate for however old your car is. And I talked to him, told him my story. He said, I'm not going to charge you this money.
Really?
And I had already given him the build sheet with the price of every option, and he verified it.
Wow.
Yeah. But he said, you know, your story is crazy.
Wow.
Your car is crazy with the options on it. And I'll do anything to help you fight the insurance company. If this helps, you can pay me $100 for this. You know, usually I think he charges $400. It's printed on paper. He sent me a PDF.
Well, so he basically just had to print out what you provided him on his paper, right? So it was an easy job.
He sent it to me, and I just sent the PDF. Wow. I scanned it and sent it.
His name? Let's give him a shout out.
I don't remember his name, but I've shouted him out on the forums because he's amazing and he did me a solid. And he does some really cool things for like the big collectors. He'll just beautiful framed original window stickers.
Yeah. It's a nice little cottage industry.
I'd love to see that sticker because it's got to be just about the most highly optioned.
I'll bring it next time.
Yeah.
I've got it.
I mean, I totally believe you. I just want to see it.
Because,
yeah.
I mean, that's amazing. And it makes you wonder why the person didn't step up to a turbo or something.
It was more than a base for a base turbo at the time.
Long,
it was more. I think this turbo base price was, it might have been closer to 130, 140.
Okay.
But I was still, you know.
Wow.
it's insane.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right. That's amazing.
It's pretty amazing. He wanted what he wanted, I guess.
Yeah.
Yes, so, and they used it. It had 60-something thousand miles on it, which was, high 60s. It was not low miles for a Porsche.
Yeah. Wow. Mm. We'll be back.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. Yeah.
So realize we didn't talk about where I was yesterday.
Yes, and where were you? Let's remind our audience, where were you and why were you
so
there?
So the continuing saga of my accelerator pedal and my 2017 718 Cayman that I've had replaced once already, broke a few weeks ago, broke again a couple weeks later after the new one was installed, and so I took it back yesterday to Porsche Colorado Springs, and I got to say, I love these guys. Yeah. It's the best dealership that I've ever been to.
I was impressed when I went.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's
incredible.
Yeah, it's like makes me want to be sell cars, you know.
I've
2 days a week or something.
Like a guy who does it because he loves them.
Yeah,
because he's a car salesman.
No, and they get that vibe from a lot of these guys. Like, they actually are enthusiasts and they're excited about this stuff. It is,
I'm not
kind of place.
Jokingly, I say this, I've seen less impressive car museums than the Porsche of Colorado Springs.
If you like the special Porsches, they've got them there. Of course, and I always feel a little funny then driving up my base Cayman,
but as I've said though before, they should treat the guy with the base Cayman the best.
Well,
that's the guy who's going to step up to the next.
That's right. Today's base Cayman driver is tomorrow's, GT2 RS. And the last time I was there, I did take a GT3 out, which we talked about. It was the 972.
Our episode title was the last car I'd ever need.
That's right.
That
and that could have been it.
It was a direct quote.
And what generation GT3?
This was the 997.2. So it was a 2010. And I see they dropped the price $5,000. It's down to $105. I thought it was still overpriced for a car that had 35,000 miles on it. And that was had several owners and beautiful car. And it had some mods that I wouldn't have done. It had a very heavy shifter, very heavy clutch. It had some it had a few mods, but it was
still best car.
It was amazing. It was amazing.
Might
it was
be just, great if you're gonna take it to the track.
But
if driving the canyons, you don't want kinds of mods.
Not really. No, and I want to keep the value and all that. I thought it was just a little overpriced. In the GT3 market, especially the 991s too, but the 997s have really softened up, and or the market has softened up, and so I didn't drive anything this time. Unfortunately, I had some work stuff, but I have a new pedal, and apparently it's been reinforced.
It's under warranty.
It's still under warranty.
Good.
Yeah, and so I even got a free travel coffee mug, Porsche travel coffee mug, out of my for my troubles.
Yeah,
but
so
what's
you've come out ahead, really?
You know that mug is $60.
That's right.
You know, I'm not sure surprised it wasn't more.
Yeah, way ahead. Coffee mugs,
But it was interesting because I actually took a look at the pedal, and it's nothing structural. There's nothing unsafe about it. What's breaking? So there were a couple of bolts, sort of Allen head bolts that went into the car through a plastic high quality plastic, still plastic base, and then the pedal assembly is there. And there's nothing in the pedal assembly that broke, but in fact it was a little clip or a little tab on the back of the base. So it was just a piece, I think, intended to prevent the base from shifting laterally. And so it would never have come undone. It never would have stopped working. Of course, it's all brake by wire, I guess, and all that. But it was this little tab, and when it would break, when I would stomp on it with my size 14s, it would start rocking, and you hear the snap, you know. And of course, you know, I said, you know, I'm obviously a big guy, you know, big feet, heavy, tall. And they said, no, I mean,
you know,
but so are the Germans. So, you know, I mean, it wasn't.
You know what they say about guys with big feet, right? They break a lot of gas pedals.
All I can say is thankfully it's under warranty, or fortunately it's under warranty, because I don't know what a pedal costs, but.
When you showed me a picture of it, yeah. I was like, that's interesting. It's like a pretty
It's a whole unit.
If a coffee mug costs $60,
that's right. It's got to be $600, right?
But again, as I said in the last podcast, after we found out you broke your second pedal, like, the Porsche pedal should not be breaking. So it's like you are.
Yeah.
I think it's a small price to pay that you've had to go down there twice.
I know.
To be like a technical service bulletin legend.
I wonder, like, do you to be on with your feet at a funny angle?
Well, you know, it's
like pushing it sideways.
Because I do have such big feet, I do have to. If I do have to do it from the side, because if I hold my foot vertically, my toes get caught under the plastic under the dash, and so
I find that on our Subaru.
Okay.
With certain shoes that I wear to work, with a more stiff sole, with the clutch, my toe catches.
That's it.
On the underside of the dash coming up.
That's it.
And so I find myself sitting kind of pigeon-toed to push it.
And that's what's happening.
And so maybe you're pushing at an angle that they didn't expect
That's it.
Pedals expect like a certain amount of pressure straight on and no strength from side to side.
I think that's what's going on. It's a great point.
And how many people have a size 14 throttle
pusher? I know, but it's why I really should be driving a GT car, right? And built to handle my
I'm sure that is like machined aluminum that
you would hope. You would hope, you know. And
I'd like to think, though, this is like being, you know, this is creeping its way to the Porsche sort of, like, you know,
patient zero. I said,
yeah, exactly. Right. The bureaucracy over there
in Germany,
I'm the one that bit by the monkey
right now.
Well, it's like, someone's saying, like, we never anticipated lateral pressure on the pedal. We should do
for
our bigger race car drivers.
That's right. Well, right, that's twice the size of your average race car driver is a problem, but no, I mean, you know, I wasn't heel to toeing. I wasn't rev matching. Both times happened when I just went to press on the gas. And the first time it was I had a sport bike. We talked about this roll up next to me, and took off. And so I punched it, and I apparently was trying to find it a little more. And then the second time I was also Highway 6, where we were today. The light was about to turn red, and I punched it. And I think you have something there. I think it was just the angle of attack, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, so that's really what it was. Well, I like to think that's going to help Porsche in an endurance race, which is all about, I mean, Porsche is all about that, and that's all about reliability and durability. So you will help Porsche.
I think you should maybe get partial credit for that. When there's like a medical condition and you know, you get named, you know, someone's name, this will be the, you know,
Lou Gehrig's disease.
Ryan's pedal.
That means you weren't able to get the broken pedal the second time.
No, because apparently they have to send it back in because they want to analyze it.
We were talking about you turning it into a trophy.
Dip it in gold, bronze it like some baby shoes, you know.
Give it out to the most unusual car breaking story that people had.
But I enjoy hanging out there. They always treat me well.
It's always a good trip.
I planned to drive that yellow GT4, but I let it slip in the first sentence. They've used 981 GT4, and I let it slip that, oh, I would never buy yellow. So I didn't want to then say, hey, can I take that car out?
Yeah. I'll save that for when they have one.
But that's a good segue into sort of where I am with cars, if you'll indulge me. So I'm still driving the 718 Cayman, and I think I missed an opportunity with that silver 981 that we talked about. The same guy called and said they had a 500-mile one, white one, fully loaded, buckets, PCCBs, but they wanted $100,000, and I can't afford that.
I feel like they are starting to drop. So this discussion is getting more interesting.
The X Factor is the new 718 GT4, and then just the softening of the market.
Right. How does a new release affect the old ones that you're looking at?
That's it. But I'm driving behind, you know, I drove that 997.2, and I was behind your 997 today, and I love the shape. I love the way it looks. I like it better than the Cayman, even if it's, you know, not dynamically. Maybe not Right.
It may not be the best driving car.
I love it.
You came and you can't beat the balance.
Yeah.
When you get behind that and you see the hips on that thing,
that's
why I wanted the four.
Yeah.
It had the wide body. And
yeah.
Just
that extra inch. You know, that's.
They just got back. But
it makes a difference.
So the dilemma now is not about trying to afford the GT4. It's whether you want
to. I don't know. Should I try to stretch? Should I try to wait? I mean, I think I'd be perfectly happy with the GT4. Apparently, I've never driven a GT4. Mm-hmm. I could love it. And I love the Cayman. But I love the 997 too. I don't know. We'll see. I guess I love the looks of your car over a Cayman. I mean, I think pretty much, okay, we differ on this, but I generally think that most 911s are more attractive than most Caymans. Mm-hmm. And, it's only enhanced when it's a GT car, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
he's saying we differ because what I tend to think the first generation, the first and the second of the Cayman might be one of the best looking cars Porsche's ever built.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, end of sentence.
Yeah. It looks better now than it did when it came out.
Nothing against any of the 911s. Yeah. I think the 997 is also one of the best looking 911s I've ever built, period. But that's just, I think that Cayman is just gorgeous.
I agree. So, I mean, as a 911 guy to the core, I think the Cayman is one of the most beautiful cars on the road. The profile on that car is just gorgeous.
The back three quarters of it, where it's got the sort of where the fender comes into the roof line, is just perfect. I mean, I don't know. I think it's great. But I mean, I'm attracted to the 911s for a lot of reasons. I don't look at a car on just looks alone, or just performance, or just value. I tend to try and look at it as all three, and you know, it's hard to argue against some of the 911s.
I mean, yeah,
for me, I have to have a back seat.
Yeah.
Well, then there's that.
That's my dilemma, too.
That was the only way I could justify it to the wife. Yeah. I'm going to drive the kids to school in this thing.
Yeah. I've gotten the same ultimatum I have three kids, which is the...
You need a bench seat.
Yeah, no, three kids is like the kiss of death if you're a sports car fan. It really is. So I've gotten my significant other, my wife, on board, as long as it has four seats.
Okay.
At least I can take most of the kids somewhere, or I can take like a lot of kids.
Are there
four seats and a rack?
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Are there any 5-seat sports car options?
Not
true
many.
Sports
no,
cars,
because,
right?
Like, yeah, it's, like so. The 911 is the practical sports car. Is a true 4-seater. You cannot put a kid in that.
Right. It's still
got
the transmission.
Got that big hump there. So that's why, as our loyal 40-person audience will tell us, is that I've been talking about BRZs.
Why are you underselling us? I think you're missing a zero.
47, yeah.
That's not.
But
with content like this, you know, how can we grow? I like having you on the show. I like having sort of the three points of, I think this works well.
I don't think the back seat of the BRZ is any bigger than the 911.
It's not. It's two. It's a true two-seater, and
I think it might be smaller, actually, than the 911. less legroom.
Less practical.
Probably.
I'll tell you guys, these guys tried to have an intervention with me and talk me out of my BRZ FRS twin discussion and get me into a Porsche.
I just think that the Porsche market has softened so much, you know, for the cars that, you know, in your budget, that I think
it's so
you'll
compelling.
Never buy them more cheaply.
No, it's true. You keep saying that, and you're absolutely right.
It's money in the bank.
These cars will never be cheaper.
No.
You know, and I'll be honest, if the right base 997, but it would probably have to be a 2005 or 6, which would make me a little nervous by the IMS, but I could live with that. But if the right one came along, I would really have to think about that.
And you, 996 is just not happening for you.
I just
can't get into it. I get it.
I just can't, and I drove that one.
Yeah.
I drove that 996, and it kind of underwhelmed me a little bit. You know, I was hoping to be blown away. So
wouldn't you say there's something to be said for having to learn to drive a 911 to really extract the power and the performance and how, you know, the early braking and all that?
I think so. You brake early, you get on the throttle early, just the balance of it.
It's a different...
But I will say, when I had my 3.2 Carrera and I went and drove a 996, I really wanted the Carrera 4S. That was what was in my budget, was just a 996. And even though it had no difference in power, back then the 4S was just the wide body, it changed my life. It made me realize how old my 89 was. I got on that thing and got on the highway and looked down, and the speed I was doing, I could not believe.
Wow. Yeah.
And I realized that, you know, our Subaru was as fast as my 89.
Really?
911.
That's fair.
That was when I realized, I want a car like this.
Yeah.
That I can drive every day. It's a modern car. And it just goes so fast.
Yeah.
Right. And then I got lucky that the 997 fell into my budget. I thought I was going to get a 996, and I got lucky with that 997.
Yeah.
And you know, the 996, it's got its shortcomings, but it's still a great car.
I think it looks, and that's another one I think looks better now. I mean, than it looked to me 2 years ago.
It's
I'm riding the wave with everyone
really
else.
Well. But no, the 997's
amazing. And dollars for performance that you can get out of that is hands down.
Insane,
it's the value proposition on that is amazing. And the early 997's the same.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. You came into this saying you wanted a Cayman.
Yeah. No, I was
and I like Cayman. The 86. Yeah. I really do. But I you know, always wonder, I think. You know, always, you know.
Well, all right. So, well, I've pretty much got it narrowed down to a Porsche let's call it the 86 Twins.
Yeah. 86 to 86.
I think you gotta go with the Subaru on that side.
Well, that's one of my dilemmas. Is just now it's the same thing about buying the owner. Like, the FRSs are real cheap, but I don't know. Like,
as long as it hasn't been vaped in.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
I can almost guarantee
index.
They're almost all vaped in. But there's more. I'm more likely to.
This is the man who came from WRX.
Yeah, I know vaping. Yeah. I know vaping cars. I find more BRZs that are older with low mileage, which tells me. Older guy bought it,
right?
Mm-hmm. You know, drove it as a special car every now and then, and now is kind of deciding he needs room in his garage. So I think I'm better off in that territory. The only argument I will make, I'm gonna make an argument here. I'm a litigator, if you will.
Throw it down.
You're absolutely right about the Porsches, and you're absolutely right about the 911s. And I think I absolutely, at the end of my rainbow, there will be a 911 or a Cayman. There will be a Porsche in my future.
Yeah.
For right now, I think the BRZ is the only other car that I think has the same kind of things you guys are talking about, which is like you learn a lot by driving it. You read enough reviews of this car, the way it rotates, the way it lets you sort of play with the limits and actually like sort of like, you know, dance around with like sort of the higher end limits of what it can do. It doesn't have high limits, but it lets you approach them like almost every time you drive it. I think I could learn a lot about driving and get better as a driver.
Okay, something to be
at
said.
At a BRZ.
Well, they say it's more fun to drive a slow car fast.
That's right.
And than a fast car slow. Like you go buy a 911 Turbo, and you realize...
But none of us can touch it.
I can't sit it here at every light and put it into launch mode and go.
No,
and I'm just putting around
and
town.
More fun.
Let's be honest. Like GTS,
you just feel like you're held back.
Yeah. Probably GTS and above of Porsche, we can't touch the limits of that as normal drivers.
Right.
We probably can't.
We don't live on the Autobahn.
We can't
go to the track every weekend.
Well, I mean, maybe Ryan can exceed the limits of the car.
I've got a lot of learning to do myself.
I just meant like the strength of the accelerator pedal.
I have to learn to turn my turn signal off, and then I have to learn about directions and one-way streets.
I did make a comment to Quinn. I said, he's got to turn that off.
He was very nervous about that.
I had a passenger who was just talking and talking.
I just gabbing in his ear, and he couldn't do it. But he was very the joke here is that Ryan accidentally left his signal on at one point behind Will. He's feeling a little self-conscious about that. Limits is like, I mean, driving it like at 9/10 and above, that's what I consider the limits, like really extracting that last 9/10 out of a car. And I don't know, for me, I don't have the time to invest in driving lessons and going to track days and things like that, and so it's like I won't be able to ever extract like the last 10th out of a GT3, even though I would probably love everything up to that. But at least with the BRZ for a few years, I could like drive that around and really sort of like throw it around and really, you know, get used to the rotation of it.
You can take that on the drive we did today up those canyons.
Except for the straightaways, I think I would be right with you guys.
But we weren't accelerating to the limit on the straightaways.
No, we really weren't.
It was all about the corners.
And I think I would be right there with it. And it's just, to me, it looks like a better performing and more reliable 944 is what the way I've been thinking about lately.
Yeah.
And it kind of is. I mean, that's what it is. So.
And this is why you're a mature adult. Like, I mean, right? I mean, there's something to be said for growing with the car, not getting in over your head or not, you know. And most of us are probably in a car that way exceeds our personal limits, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's
a lot of us, unfortunately, our income exceeds our driving talent sometimes.
Well, I mentioned this to Doug when you were...
Is a repo guy here?
When we were on break before, a buddy of mine bought a 997 Turbo.
Yeah.
And he bought it, and he brought it home, and it was that feeling.
Yeah.
He was like, wow, this was really fun to test drive, and the acceleration was crazy.
Yeah.
And then he's like, well, but I'm just driving it.
Yeah.
And I can't do this every time.
Yeah.
And I have a car whose performance thresholds are just so far beyond anything I can experience in regular use of this car. He didn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
He had a 993 before that, and he loved his 993, and he didn't like his turbo.
Interesting. Yeah.
And he sold it within a year.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
And now he's the one I'm trying to talk into the GT3 Touring. Which that might be the next episode.
I think that would bring it all back, right?
If he gets a GT3 Touring, we will definitely love to have
one. One of the ones he was looking at, I think it was on the Renless forum, was more local to us. He lives on the East Coast, but it was out here, and I'm like, oh, please buy the one out here.
I'll
be your delivery.
Yeah,
man.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
When you go check that out, make sure all is well, right?
Well, if that ever happens, then you bring that by here. Right. So,
well, I mean, come on. Are we all on the same page? If we had the money, that'd probably be the car.
Hands down.
If I had that kind of money,
I'd buy a GT3 Touring
right now, today,
in a second.
Yeah, GT3 Touring, absolutely.
The one car that I hear maybe is better than that car is the 9972 GT3 4.0.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's the car. That seems to sort of be the grail car, but those are, what, $500,000 now.
And I don't love all the big aero.
Yeah.
It's great if you're actually using it as it's intended on the track. Yeah. But for... I want a car that I can drive around town and drive up the canyons.
I love that it doesn't...
I don't need that giant wing on it.
Yeah. I can appreciate that.
The Touring is just perfect for me.
I'm with you 100%.
Yeah.
Now, how would you spec yours?
Oh, man. Probably as low as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's got everything you need.
Yeah. I think I'd do the bucket seats. So I've got the Sport Plus or whatever in my Cayman, and I had them in my 997. I think you had them in your first 997.
Yeah, the hardback buckets.
And those are sort of the
great.
Yeah,
and those my wife hated getting out of it, but I loved the way it held you in there when you're just carving through those turns.
Absolutely. But those are the cheap seats in the GT3 Touring, right?
Because
then they have the real
carbon buckets.
Well, if we're talking about seats, I would do those. Whatever I'd have to do to get the houndstooth cloth.
That's
my catnip. Yeah. That's you can get them on the Touring.
Can you get that now?
And that's my catnip. That's what I want. I need that. So
I was so afraid I wouldn't fit into the things, and then I got into them, and I just fit. And I'd love to get one because that means I can't get any fatter. But they are amazing because
you feel bad every time.
That's right. A little pinch, you know. You really do feel that much more part of the car. I mean, there's no movement. There's no movement. Oh, you're not sliding around. You're not moving around on the padding or whatever. But I think I would probably have to go with those as long as I could, you know, I'm young enough to get in and out of them. And I love the houndstooth. I think I would go low spec too, though. I mean, I love GT Silver, but maybe I would do something a little like a paint to sample just to spice it up. You pay a little money for the color.
Yeah,
I mean, if you're at that price point, right?
There aren't a lot of options to put on something like that.
No.
Yeah.
I don't even need a stereo in a car like that. I know they do it in the States because you need the screen for the rear
view. They'll give you a no cost stereo delete. I think they do.
I wouldn't need a thing.
It's
I don't even need the carbon brakes. I just give me that car. It's just everything about it is perfect. And this is where Doug's computer died. It wasn't like The Sopranos where a hitman came through the door and then we faded to black. But we're wrapping it up anyway. So thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week.